This is the Gambling Gauchos.
Somebody turn on some damn music!
You're listening to the Gambling Gauchos. Talking Texas Tech, betting on the Big 12 and beyond. We've got everything you need. Money lines, memes, and matadors.
Well, you want to quit, Ethan? That'll be the day.
Now, here's Kyle Jacobson and Rob Bro, the Money Line Matadors, the Casino Cowboys, the Parlay Picadors.
You see, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns, and those who dig. You dig. With
the Gambling Gauchos. Oh, and one more thing. It's all West Texas. It always has been.
Welcome into the Gambling Gauchos. I am Rob Rowe. He's Kyle Jacobson. Welcome to the show, Kyle. I also have a guest today, Chris Williams, Iowa State expert. We have you on, Chris, today. Chris, how you doing, man?
I've never been better. That's the greatest intro I've ever heard.
Oh, we appreciate that. We never actually realized how long it was until the first time we had a guest and played it. And we're like, man, he's just sitting there through this whole thing. Like, this is kind of so it's a little bit excessive, but I'm glad you like it.
No, so here's what you don't know about me. I'm really into like Westerns.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah, like, so I grew up with like my dad and my uncles, and they were all obsessed with Westerns. So like that, like Western guy or whoever, that all that really appeals to me. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody on one of my shows. It was about how I could live in Lubbock. Like, that's a place in the Big 12 where I could see myself living. I like your guys' way of life down there. It's a good spot.
Love that. And I have to say the same for Ames. I haven't been up there for a game yet, but I stopped in Ames while road tripping to the Final Four a few years ago, because, you know, that's like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I thought Ames was a really cool college town. And I couldn't survive, you know, January, February up there, but I was like, if I was accustomed to this, Ames is a cool town, and I would totally have gone to college here or lived here.
I was about to say, I could live in Ames from like March to November.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a sweet spot.
I'm not cut out for
the snow. Today's game, or this weekend's game, is going to be pretty brutal for November, and I think we will talk more about that. But Chris, thank you for joining us. You're live in the Cardinals Sports Center studio. If you need to gear up, bundle up with a beanie, a jacket, a coat over your jacket, and a blanket to go over your coat, mittens, beanies, get them all at Cardinals. You can shop online.
Scarf.
Yeah, a scarf. It's going to be a cold one.
Yeah.
And we will talk about that. So bundle up, gear up with our friends at Cardinals, and we appreciate their support of the Gambling Gauchos. Where do you want to start with Chris, Rob?
Well, Chris, with the Cyclone Fanatic, the publisher there, I guess let's just start with this season and maybe the – no pun intended, temperature check on the season from the fan base, because you go from kind of 7-5, 8-4 as kind of a floor to a 4-6 start this year. How's the fan base handling this with Matt Campbell?
I think it's pretty complex, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago where Iowa State was just really horrible, right? Like, I mean, that's most Iowa State fans, the seasoned ones, I always joke, you don't become an Iowa State fan because it's easy. You do it because it's awesome to be an Iowa State fan. It's kind of a thing I've always said. And so, like, right now, it's complex even for me, and I've been around this program a long time, like 20 years now, where, like, you're 1-6 in the Big 12, but all the games are, like, really close. And I remember when you would be 1-6 in the Big 12 and you were losing to Baylor by 70. So, like, you, on one hand, you appreciate how far everything has come, or even in your bad year, like all these games are competitive. You can beat anybody on your schedule and all that's true, but you still, you know, with success come raised expectations. And that's kind of where everybody's at. Like, you could see why they would be struggling this year. You lose all of that talent. You got to basically reset. But in the same time, you've got the best defense in the league. You are just like a play or two away from having three losses right now. And that's maddening as a fan when you – they should have beaten Oklahoma State by 20 last week. But you turn it over five times on the road. No team can come up. It's not possible to win on the road in a conference game and commit five turnovers. So that's where the fan base is just, it's really frustrating because you feel like you should be better. And like, I don't know, like, again, like I've been around for a while now, and like, you're not that frustrated when you lose by 70 because you just feel like, well, the other team, we suck. And I don't think many people feel that way about Iowa State because of its defense. It's just, there's a lot of missed opportunities, and to me, that will be, no matter what happens the rest of the way, that's how I would sum up this season.
A lot of that resonates so much with a Texas Tech fan in the last decade. It's not easy to be a Tech fan either, in a lot of sports. But also just, you feel like Iowa State is good on one hand. On the other hand, you are what your record is. So when Texas Tech is
exactly
4-8, but you have a bunch of one possession losses, it's like, well, this team is good, but the rest of the Big 12 is just a possession better, and that's so frustrating.
Well, and with Texas Tech, it was always the other side of the football. Like, everybody's like, how did you go 5-7 with Patrick Mahomes? How do you score 48 points and lose seven games? It's like, well, you have the 119th ranked defense in FBS. That's how. And with Iowa State, all these losses are competitive, one-score losses, and, you know, they're giving up, I don't know, 17 points, 23 points, but just can't quite get over the hump offensively. I do want to ask, because last week we had this huge ongoing petition to run the damn ball, because for some reason Texas Tech insists on throwing it, and Kansas's run defense especially was horrid. And so we were like, just hand the ball off and you should be able to beat these guys. And it's a recipe that seemed to work last weekend. I was looking for any kind of way, looking at all these stats, the box scores, if there was any weak point for Iowa State's defense, and there isn't one that's very apparent to me. Is there any, I don't even want to call it weakness because that feels like too strong of a word, but potential pressure point that Texas Tech might be able to expose on that side of the ball on Saturday?
That's a really good question. And if there is, you know, it would surprise me because nobody's been able to really do it so far this year. The one thing that this defense is semi-prone to, it's giving up that monster play. And there are two games this year where I would never put the losses on the defense because it's doing its job. But the Kansas State game and then last week against Oklahoma State, these two offenses that could not do anything, couldn't move the ball, and then boom, they had like an 80-yard play where there's a, you know, reserve safety in the game and he gets burned or something because you can't really throw on Iowa State's corners. I think two NFL guys, one for sure in TJ Tampa. And then the defensive line, you know, has continuously been a strength under Matt Campbell. And I think you have two NFL guys up front, at least for Iowa State. The middle is not as good. So I don't know how you guys are at throwing out of the backfield and stuff like that. I would test the linebackers a little bit, but I want to turn this around on you guys because I'm interested as I was doing my prep on Texas Tech, and this I kind of feel like that if you think that Tech can run the football, to me that gives the Red Raiders a much better chance to come into Ames and get a win because it's going to be cold. And I am curious about, I feel like fans often will make too big of a deal out of the weather. Like, oh, the Texas team has to come to Ames in November, right? And we make too big of a deal out of that. But there's also some reality there where there's snow on the ground here. It is freezing for November. Like, this is as cold of a November as it, because it was like 75 a week ago. and it is freezing out there right now. And I just, like, I don't know if throwing the football is going to be much of a thing for anybody, honestly, on Saturday. So, like, one, I guess I would ask you guys, do you buy into the weather thing when you come from West Texas? And two, I mean, yeah, the running game thing would be really interesting to me to see how you guys answer it. Because I would say if whoever wins this game is going to have to be able to run the ball. And that's where I'm having a hard time picking Iowa State, because they haven't been able to – like, Oklahoma State was giving up 250 yards a game the last month, and Iowa State averaged under 2 yards per carry against them. So, like, I don't care how bad Tech's defense is. Like, I'm not buying that Iowa State can consistently put it on the ground and run it, and then you're putting it in the hands of Hunter Deckers, who's a turnover machine right now. So, I'm throwing it back at you guys. What do you think about that?
Is it true – just before I answer the weather thing, is it true that – that Iowa State has as many rushing yards in conference play as they did in non-conference? Because it kind of looked like
I have not added that up.
I was just looking at broad stats.
It wouldn't surprise me.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me because they ran it, believe it or not, like, and it just doesn't make any sense. And this is why I think you'll see some staff changes on the offensive side, because they've regressed. Like, they ran the football well against the University of Iowa in Kinnick Stadium, and Iowa might have the best defense in all of college football. They had a 100-yard rusher. They were averaging 5-6 yards a pop in the second half in that game. The other two non-conference games were against bad opponents, but they ran all over it. And they ran for 175 against West Virginia a couple of weeks ago. But other than that, I mean, guys, they're struggling to break the 3 yards per carry mark in conference, and it's just maddening to watch, because you're asking this inexperienced young quarterback to go back there with a bad offensive line to throw it 50 times per game. You can't win that way. I haven't seen that stat, but it wouldn't surprise me.
After, you know, David Washington and Breece Hall back to back.
David Montgomery.
What'd I say?
David Washington.
I don't know who that is. David Montgomery. And
it's all good. I got it.
Now I can't. Breece Hall back to back.
Breece Hall.
You kind of thought Jarrell Brock would be the next guy, but it just hasn't kind of gone that way.
Yeah, and in his defense, he's been hurt. So he got hurt. Which game was it? It was the Kansas game. It was the first series of the Kansas game, and he has not been the same since. He's been in and out, and he had surgery this week, so he won't be in the lineup on Saturday. So here's what's interesting about that is you think that about Brock, and I agree, it was kind of his time to shine. But this freshman is actually, like, supposed to be the next Iowa State NFL guy, Cartavius Norton. He got his first start last week, but that was a week after he got in the end zone twice against West Virginia. I foolishly predicted that last week would be his breakout game. I thought he'd run for 150 on Oklahoma State. Turned out to not be the case. And I know what you guys are thinking, because I think there's similarities between the fan bases. You're like, oh, crap, now he's going to do it against us.
Yeah.
But I do think that this Norton is really, really, really going to be special. But I just don't know. I don't think he's at their level, clearly. And I don't have any faith that Iowa State's offensive line is good enough to push anybody around at this point.
Yeah, I'll be curious about a few different dynamics. So first off, Texas Tech's best player, Tyree Wilson, probably a lock to go in the first round of the NFL draft next spring. He is out probably for the season. He's not going to play. Now, his main skill set is rushing the passer, but he's a perfectly formidable run stopper as well. So you'll have that going for you. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to alter the rotation with him out. Offensively, I don't know if Texas Tech is great at running the ball. They're serviceable, and I thought they could do it effectively against Kansas, which they did. But with the weather being like it is, if you're saying, hey, we're going to do this at volume and hand the ball off 50 times, I don't know if that's a recipe for success. But like you said, it's going to be hard to put it in the air for either team, given the conditions. I will say, starting quarterback Tyler Shuck spent some time at Oregon before transferring to Texas Tech. I guess was so concerned about the weather, I went back and looked at the temperature of the games he started in 2020 at Oregon, and several of them were in the 30s, which is cold, but I know Saturday will be a different animal. I know Texas Tech was also practicing in 27-degree weather this week, which still, once you're up in Ames and it's in the teens, different animal. So I'm curious to see how all that unfolds and how to what extent Texas Tech tries to force running the ball, or if they're going to maybe try to not let the weather dictate it and try and throw it like they often do.
Yeah, I was going to say that the weather didn't matter. And then I saw a video of Eli King, a basketball player for Iowa State, nosedive yeah. into the snow, get up, not dust himself off at all. Snow is on his face, get in his car and drive away. And if there are guys like that on the football team from Iowa, like born and raised in the snow, okay, it might be a little different. But I will just say, like, from a body acclimation standpoint, 15-degree weather is not normal, even in Iowa, especially in November, at least this season. So it's going to be a new experience for both teams, at least for this year.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the latest forecast right now. The high for the day is 22. And then the wind is really the thing you've got. Because you guys got to understand, the Iowa State campus is basically, it's like, I don't know if it's on a hill, but it's like a wind tunnel. Like, it is the windiest place on earth. Like, so I grew up in Southwest Iowa, which is about 2.5 hours away from Ames. And when I went to college my freshman year, I quickly learned that none of my winter gear, I needed to call your guys' sponsor. None of my gear worked up there. I was freezing because the wind is just so different. And here's the thing to watch. 15 to 25 mile per hour winds. And that will be, you guys are a gambling podcast. I would play the under right now.
Yeah.
Because Iowa State's defense, if you're Iowa State too, I just don't know how much faith you have doing a whole lot with that quarterback right now either. That's really the key. Yeah. It'll be cold, but it's funny, I was talking to another reporter today. I've covered a lot colder games at Jack Trice than what Saturday is going to be. But it's always – the determining factor is always that wind in Jack Trice Stadium. And it's better now since they've bowled in that end zone. Back in the day, both end zones were open, so the wind would be like swirling. It would be like a little like tornado. It was crazy. Like, you would watch kicks and they look like they're going to be right, and then they missed it wide left. It was the damnedest thing you'd ever seen. And that's kind of gone away. But the wind is the thing I would really keep an eye on. And I've seen Chuck play. Iowa State actually played him in the Fiesta Bowl.
That's right.
In 2020. Yeah, and he went to high school, like, basically across town from Brock Purdy. And those two knew each other and did a bunch of stories on him. I really like him. I'm rooting for him. I was kind of been rooting for him the whole way. I hope that he has a nice, like, back end of his career, because I think he's a really good guy.
Yeah, he's definitely had to kind of battle through it with injuries even after making the transfer.
Yeah.
He's kind of had a long and winding road. And, you know, it's funny you talking about the wind and how that is the determining factor when it's 22 degrees, because people in West Texas kind of do the same thing in the summer with the heat. Like, it'll be 102, but everybody here will tell you that it's a dry heat, so it's not that bad, versus like the humidity in Southeast Texas makes it 20 times worse. Like, it could be 95 with humidity is worse than it being 102 without humidity. And so we don't get cold temperatures like y'all do, but when it does get below freezing here, it is 10 times worse when it's windy. So,
oh, I believe it.
We'll see how that goes. I guess next up, you want to do the mailbag?
Yeah.
We've got a Patreon community, Chris, submitted questions of their own. Some of these are going to be really goofy. Some of them will actually be about the football game. So apologies in advance for some of these.
You know, goofier the better. I'm a nut, so this is good. I like it.
All right, so we're going to go start, bench, cut. Are you familiar with the format? You're going to start one, bench one, and cut one.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I've played this game, but with another –
different titles, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the Golden Gate Bridge, Brooklyn Bridge, and the Iowa State Pedestrian Bridge. Start, bench, cut. Oh.
What are my options again? Because I'm used to the other one, because I know which one I want to marry. And that's the pedestrian bridge. I want to sleep at that every night the rest of my life. It's elite.
Start bench cut.
Okay, I'm going to start the pedestrian bridge for so many different. You guys, obviously, when you come up to Ames next time,
yeah,
you're going to have to just. So I usually home games. I'm not going to do it this weekend, but I'll bring my camper up there, and we just take long starlit walks across the pedestrian bridge, and it's just a breathtaking sight. You guys would just be all over it. So I'm starting that. I'm going to I'm definitely cutting the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
I mean,
traffic and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, I think
I've never been to the Golden Gate Bridge, but I used to like watching Full House, and they had that in its opening. So because of the great Bob Saget, I think I'm going to go with I'm going to cut the Brooklyn Bridge.
I love the bridge bit with Iowa State fans.
Oh,
so
awesome.
I guess I'll preface this by saying probably 90% of our followers are Texas Tech fans, but the other two fan bases that like to follow us are Kansas State and Iowa State. And I think most of them are joking and like leaning into the bit, but I'm not always 100% sure. But people like pray to the bridge, and they have like, "Oh, bridge, my bridge," yeah, poems. And I love it. It's so great.
I wish that you guys – so my wife and I both went to college there, and so my in-laws live in Ames. I live down closer to Des Moines, but like 30 minutes away. And we were driving around. Like when we went to college at Iowa State, it was so ugly. Like the actual campus itself is beautiful, but like all of a sudden you just get off the interstate and here's this football stadium that looked like a D2 stadium, right? Like I wish that you guys could see like a before and after of the like entrance to the campus, which is the athletic complex and stuff. So there is like a lot of pride in that. But I also think that we all can realize how ridiculous it is that we're all obsessed with this pedestrian bridge. But it is cool. If you'd see it on game day, you guys would be like, okay, that's pretty sweet, because there's this basically like a highway that you have to cross like tailgaters do. And tailgating the names is elite. You guys have got to get up here in 2 years. You can stay at my house. We'll put it up. We'll do a whole tailgate. It'll be amazing. But these all like thousands of people used to have to cross this highway basically to get to the stadium. So they put this bridge up so that they didn't have to stop traffic now. And it's actually been very functional. Like traffic flows right out of there after the game.
That was my question was, what was the traffic like before? Because I guess they're just having cops and, traffic stoppers out there with all kinds of air traffic control flashlights and everything else.
That's exactly it.
Crazy.
Yeah, and you just, it sucked if you were in a car. But, I'm usually there well in advance of the game, so I don't fight traffic that much. But I'm up in the press box after the game, and I watch it, and it's just flowing now. So you can thank the beautiful world-class pedestrian bridge for that.
Well, what's crazy is every time I talk to an Iowa State fan, I find more and more in common with them. We used to have to cross what was called the Brownfield Highway back in my day, and now we have a pedestrian bridge over what's now the Marcia Sharp Freeway. But it doesn't have the cool lights, and it doesn't say Texas Tech University across it. It's just a functional bridge. This one, I mean, it's lit up.
Yeah.
It has
the
glitz and the glamour, just like Ames, Iowa does.
Here's what I love about this new Big 12, and I'm perfectly content with losing the uppity assholes in Austin and Norman. Can I cuss on this podcast? Is that okay?
Sure.
I have a feeling I might have a problem with Central Florida fans, but that – We'll deal with that.
Cross that
there.
Bridge when we get there.
It's,
huh?
It's a healthy skepticism.
Yeah, but like I love the fact that like because sports writers are the worst, and I have a lot of friends who are sports writers, but they're all like, they want to go to the really like glitzy, like glamorous, like, oh, Austin's my favorite. Bullshit. But Austin, like, I can go to Austin and go to Sixth Street on like a vacation. Like if I'm going to I want to go to a college town.
Yeah.
You ever been to Manhattan, Kansas, and Aggieville or Lubbock? Like those are college towns. Morgantown and this whole new Big 12. Like all these towns are similar, and I really, really appreciate that about the new league. And I actually think too that this new Big 12 is going to be a total pain in the ass to like bad national sports writers. We've kind of seen it already, but especially with this Pac-12, this ridiculousness of the Pac-12 TV deal versus the Big 12 and everything that's been going on. But like, I sense this unity within the league that I have never felt before. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, totally agreed there. And if the national beat writers that are pretty much based in either New York City / Bristol or the West Coast don't like it, then that's too damn bad.
Yeah. All right, back to the Diversified Lenders mailbag. This question, and he says, sorry to pile on, but I kind of hate Iowa State. This is not me. This is Michael saying this.
Easy, Michael.
But he said, would you trade last year's offense – or what would you trade for last year's offense? And then he has some stats here. Max Olson says, please, ESPN Bill Connolly, enlighten us. If 2022 Iowa State had the same defense and special teams, but you swap the 2021 offense, where would they rank in S&P Plus? And Connolly says they'd be sixth in S&P Plus if you had the 2021 offense and this year's defense and special teams. So what would you trade for last year's offense with this year's defense and special teams?
Like, I have to make like a personnel trade or like something like that I hold dear to me in my life.
Well, the next question is, would you trade the bridge? But yeah, you can give any kind of trade you want.
I mean, I think I'd trade the bridge. I mean, is that the wrong answer? It's an elite bridge. I'm very thankful for the bridge. I appreciate the bridge. It's been great. But, I mean, if Iowa State's sixth, then that means they're, like, knocking on the door to the playoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And here's the bitch of it. This is the thing about being an Iowa State fan. So our one big year happens to be during the pandemic.
Yes.
And nobody's – you can't even go to the bowl game. They didn't even let people – is that not the most Iowa State thing ever? You wait your whole life for this special season, Big 12 championship game, which we got screwed in. Like, come on. That's the most fan thing I've ever said right there. You guys will appreciate it.
Yeah.
And then you go to and win the Fiesta Bowl, and fans can't go. Like, that's the most Iowa State thing ever. It's a total, just an absolute shot in the nuts from the football gods.
So, two-part follow-up. Some say, mostly Kansas State fans, but some say that the Iowa State Fiesta Bowl win has an asterisk next to it because it was the COVID year. And some would say that y'all played like the fourth place team from the Pac-12 that year and that it was like a Mickey Mouse New Year's Six Bowl. Would you give up the 2020 PlayStation Fiesta Bowl in order to roll the dice with the number six SP Plus team, last year's offense plus this year's defense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
No brain. Because it was a really great year. And, like, in all seriousness, during COVID, that just sucked. Like, it just sucked for everybody. And it was really fun to have that football season to kind of take your mind off of everything and, you know, everything that was going on and everything that you couldn't do. But it also, like, again, being dead serious here, Iowa State fans deserve that year. And they deserve to go to the Big 12 championship game with at a max capacity, and they deserve to go on a bowl charter to a Fiesta Bowl, right? Like, this is the, like, perennially one of the worst football programs in the history of college football. And throughout that, look at their season ticket numbers over the last 20 years. It goes up every year. It's the most loyal fan base. And I genuinely love these people. Like, to give them the opportunity to do those things in a normal society without a global pandemic, I would trade that in a heartbeat. Not to, and the Kansas State fans, like, I can't decide if I love or hate that group. I think I hate them.
Yeah. That's sports though.
Yeah. I think I hate Kansas State. But I also, like, it's funny because if you were to ask me, like, well, who do you think Iowa State fans are the most like, you know, they would probably be because they're ag, you know, they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's very similar to Iowa State, and like their fans are just like really – Iowa State fans can be hyper defensive and like really kind of nasty if you get on their bad side. And I see that with Kansas State all the time.
Yeah.
But that – I don't think anybody with a straight face would ever say, like, if Kansas State had had Iowa State season in 2020, do you think they'd be saying that? I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's funny to watch the Farmageddon dynamic as not just like a neutral third party, but Kansas State and Iowa State are probably our two favorite schools and fan bases outside of Texas Tech. And I feel like both of those schools and fan bases like the Gauchos and Texas Tech. So I feel like I'm like the child witnessing a divorce here. It's like they both love us, but they're arguing with each other. And I love both of them. And like they want us to pick a side during Farmageddon week. And like, you know, I don't know about that, yeah. You know.
We get two Christmases. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we like both of them, but we can understand if you're in the trenches there that you might not like the other side.
We get a comment on our stream here that sounds like you're describing Tech fans. I had the same thought.
Yes.
If you just said, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, they get defensive on Twitter. It's an ag loyal. School. They're loyal. Like, who are you talking about? You're talking about Kansas State, Iowa State, or Texas Tech?
Yeah.
I've never in my life had a problem with a single Texas Tech fan ever. Maybe I'm not around them enough, but I've called some women's games in Lubbock and like, I've always found it to be a really like, I mean it like of all the Big 12 schools, Bloom and I were talking about this on Sunday. That's what we were talking about. Cause we were talking about this game and we were talking about if you had to live in another Big 12 school city, where would you go? And like, to me, I'm very much like born and raised in the country. Like I live in a town now of like 6,000-7,000 people and it's like too much for me sometimes. And like, I like Lubbock. Like I've never had a problem with the Texas Tech fan. Now I also like Morgantown a lot, but some of those guys can be just raging assholes on Twitter. They get, which I don't have a problem with West Virginia, but the Kansas State fans, they're so similar to Iowa State because they have like a gang type of mentality.
Yeah.
When you go after one of them, like there's going to be 15 of them in your feed within like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how Iowa State fans are as well.
Maybe form a bit.
Yeah.
All right, let's lightning round the rest of these. Where were you? I'm assuming you were covering the 2016 Patrick Mahomes game. I'm going to add a question here.
Yes.
Why is that like y'all's Super Bowl? Y'all still talk about it. Like you beat a 5-7 team. Can we get past it,
please?
He's
the greatest player in the world.
And, like, and I honestly don't do that because didn't Mahomes get hurt? Like, he didn't even play in that game.
No,
hardly,
he played,
did he?
But he had a torn, he had a sprained MCL.
He left when y'all were, like, up by 40. It wouldn't have made a difference.
I think there's two reasons I would give you for that. Okay. One, that was kind of when that game, to me, it was kind of like, oh, Matt Campbell and like this thing's turning around and this is legit.
Sure.
Cause that was
fair.
That first year was rough. And then by the end of the year, they were a pretty tough out.
Yeah.
And it was also an iconic game because, well, but they were turning it around. Like, hey, sure. It's all good. Yeah. They were competitive at the end of that year. And then it was didn't Joel Lanning have like 5 touchdowns in that game or something like that?
I think he just never stopped. He had 600 yards rushing, I think.
So it was like this. I think he set a record in that game, actually.
Oh, I'm sure. I think he had 6 touchdowns.
I think the legend went of the Mahomes thing, him going to the Chiefs. I mean, you got to realize the dichotomy here. It's you're a Chiefs fan, you're a Vikings fan, a Bears fan, or a Packers fan, basically. Like we don't have pro sports in this state.
Yeah.
Mahomes goes there, sets the world on fire, and then that. If Mahomes is having the career of Baker Mayfield right now, like that game probably doesn't get the love. But I mean, as I'm sitting here right now, I'm watching a Patrick Mahomes Hy-Vee commercial on my TV during the Iowa State women's game. Like the guy, you can't escape him here. Yeah. So, like you guys would love it, but I think that's why the game has so much lore. Fair. To it because of that. Fair. But I agree with you. It's kind of – I remember the only thing I remember about that game, it was freezing, and I remember that Mahomes didn't play that much and he was hurt. That's all I can remember. But, yeah, screw you guys. We beat you by like 60 that night.
It was only 56.
Yeah.
Settle down there, Chris.
Well, and what made it even worse was, like, Tech didn't beat Iowa State for like 4 more years, and Matt Campbell was undefeated for half a decade against Texas Tech. And
but then you guys kicked that like 80-yard field goal last year.
Yeah, that kind of slayed the demon a bit.
Jeez. All right, that's what makes me nervous about Saturday. I just feel like this thing's turning on Iowa State bad, but we'll see.
Let's hope so.
Two more here real quick. Who is the greatest player in Iowa State history, and why is it Seneca Wallace?
Another I love Seneca. Moment
in Texas Tech history with the run.
Yeah, the run.
Oh, God. Yeah, you guys were the – and that game was on TBS. Remember when games were on TBS?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Craig Sager was the sideline reporter in Ames that day.
With the
believe
with
it
the
or not. You want my honest opinion, or are we just leaving it that Seneca is the best?
Because yeah, I could give your best Iowa State player ever.
It's Troy Davis. I mean, how old are you guys?
33. Is that the running back?
Yeah, so you're too young, but I mean, this is back when Iowa State was terrible, and
like a 2,000-yard rusher, and he was the only one doing anything.
Yeah, and like the thing about it is, everybody knew where the ball was going every snap.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he would still run for 200, 250 yards a game. Like it was, he got absolutely robbed of the Heisman. Now, you can't give the. I think you should, but you know, they were 4-8 the year. He should have won the Heisman. Danny Werfel won it. But there was no more outstanding player in college football. He's the best. Like I actually did a podcast with me and Sage Rosenfels did it with Ricky Williams a few like last month, and Ricky talked to us about how he thought Troy Davis was like the greatest running back that he's ever seen, because he got drafted to the Saints and Troy was on the roster, and it was really fascinating to hear it from Ricky Williams' standpoint, like the aura of Troy Davis. Yeah, I don't think that I would even think about putting anyone else in his category.
Another question. We sort of as a bit, sort of seriously, are always focused on uniforms, both for Texas Tech and our opponent, and we love looking at throwbacks and all this stuff. So we have a question of which Iowa State uniform combo is your favorite, and then I've got a follow-up thought depending on what your answer is.
You know – that's hard because they do so many of them now. I don't know if I would say the black. I really, really, really like the black. To say it's my favorite, though, I don't know. I would probably go with the pretty traditional gold tops. I like it when they wear – I'll say this. I really like their black helmet. They do a black helmet with – it's like a matte black with the Cardinal – I-State logo in the middle of it. I like it when they wear those domes with the Cardinal tops and then the white pants. I don't like Cardinal on Cardinal. I'm not a big fan of that at all. Okay. I like it when they incorporate the black, but I'm not a huge all-black guy.
Okay, so two thoughts on that. First, some people don't like Iowa State's black uniforms because black isn't one of your school colors. Second,
some people.
I was growing up when Iowa State was – pretty aggressively using navy blue as their tertiary accent.
Oh, God, yes.
And I loved it. Yeah. I want you all to bring that back. So thoughts on the criticism that black isn't your school color and thoughts on navy blue as an accent color?
I love it that they do the black because it pisses Iowa fans off.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So I like it. Like, I think it's funny. And I'm totally cool with it. Listen, it's funny. I saw a story of this somebody today. I did a column. It was like it was right before Paul Rhodes got fired, and the whole column was on, and granted hindsight here, but it was about like Iowa State needs to do something to stand out. You're the northernmost boring school in the eyes of most people. You don't do anything on social media. Your uniforms suck. And meanwhile, you're looking at Baylor, who used to be the armpit of the league, and they're basically the new Oregon back in the day. Right. And I wrote a call about that, and Paul Rhodes, like, I gave him an opportunity, and he's like, no, when people turn on the Cyclones, they need to know it's Iowa State on there. And I'm like, just like, God. So like, I'll give him credit for trying to be cool and for pressing that. And I'll never criticize as far as that goes. As far as the Navy goes, I think they should do it ironically, because that is, people hate it here. They think the Navy was just like this awful era of Iowa State athletics, and they were just gaudy outfits and their uniforms. I sounded like my wife. But I think they should do it. They should do a totally like ironic throwback with the Navies. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I want to go all the way and seeing like a Navy top or a Navy lid, but I liked it when it was like the outline to the numbers or outline to the ISU. Cause it used to be actually like the bird in the red tornado was the logo that I grew up with.
Yeah. The buff bird.
And I liked that.
Yeah. The way, in my opinion, where they missed was instead of going all black with white, they should have brought in like some sort of, and wrestling does this with their singlets, where it's a black singlet, and then the Iowa State logo is like a, it's almost like a neon type of red, because it stands out, and it looks really, 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 really cool.
Yes.
And I think that's where football missed. They should have incorporated that shade of red just a little bit in those.
Yeah, black and red do look really good.
That's true. That's true. I don't like the black and white, but is it true that it's black and white because they don't want the yellow and black to touch because of Iowa? Is that accurate?
I don't know if that's the reason, but it would certainly make sense.
Okay.
I do know that Matt Campbell just genuinely loves the color black. He was wearing green on set because they were doing the Veterans Day. All the coaches were wearing those like green hoodies, you know?
Right.
And it was disorienting to the fan base that Campbell wasn't wearing his black. Like, he always wears black. If you walk into the facility and you see Matt Campbell, like maybe he's walking into the gym or maybe he is Johnny Cash. The guy is always wearing black.
Interesting.
So yeah, he loves the color black. I'm sure that's where it, but what's crazy is the entire university has adopted it now. And you're going to see Iowa State basketball with a black alternate now, and the women with a black alternate now. So they've completely adopted this thing, and it's not going anywhere. There's no turning back.
All right. So as we mentioned at the outset, we're a sports gambling podcast. What we do every week with our guest is make some picks around the Big 12. You want to stick around and make picks with us for a few minutes?
Yeah, as long as you don't hear, if you hear a couple of giggling girls in the background, those are my daughters. But
that's okay. I've got an 8-month-old, so I look forward to those days in a few years from now.
they're growing up quite well. They're sitting here in my office and they're watching the Iowa State women's basketball team. So we're teaching them good.
Yeah, good for them.
That's what they're doing. All right. Yeah, okay. I'll do picks.
All right, we'll start with maybe the game of the week in the Big 12, the rivalry. TCU goes to Waco to play Baylor. TCU, of course, already a lock to make the Big 12 championship game, fighting for playoff contention. They are only 2.5-point favorites in this game, even though it's on the road. Do you have a thought on the spread, 2.5 there, and the total is 58 in Waco?
My thought is that I probably wouldn't bet this game. This feels like a trap of some sort, especially with Baylor coming off of such a poor performance last week. They're not that bad. And you just get the feeling. I think I'm more of a believer in TCU than anybody. Let me give you a really quick story. Is Max Duggan's dad actually called – he coached a high school team up here, and I used to be their play-by-play guy. So I've known – I mean, I knew Max when he was a little boy. So I'm very biased towards TCU, and I think that they've been disrespected quite a bit. But I also watch the games and know that, man, their margin of error is pretty small, and it just feels like they're going to get bit one of these times. And if I wouldn't bet your guys' money on this game, to be honest with you. But I might lean Baylor just because it feels like a trap. What do you guys think?
Same, but I said the same exact thing last week, and I flipped a coin and landed with, I'll just pick the home team. And I picked Baylor versus Kansas State, and it didn't work. So I'm going to roll with TCU here as the road team.
Yeah. I feel like as soon as I'm not a TCU doubter to the extent that others are, but I have been surprised at their run this season. Kind of thought, okay, it's going to catch up to them against Oklahoma State or Kansas State or Texas. And I know the week that I finally get on board and pick them, they're going to lose. But my head and gut does tell me that Baylor, I think is going to have something for him. It's a rivalry game, like you said, bounce back opportunity. They would love nothing more than to spoil TCU's season. And I just don't think they're as bad as they played last week. I think these two teams are somewhat evenly matched despite the disparity in records. So I'm leaning Baylor, but I'm probably going to be wrong again.
I hope TCU wins because I really do want Iowa State to go in there next week. Because I don't think Iowa State will win, but with Iowa State's defense, you're always going to have a chance. And Iowa State has been known with Oklahoma State in 2011 to play spoiler before.
Right.
And I just think it'd be fun for Iowa State to have that opportunity.
That would be chef's kiss, the most brutal thing for TCU, and I would love it.
Yeah, you know, because they were ranked number 3 in the country in 2014. They beat the tar out of Iowa State their last game of the season and still didn't make the playoff. So if this year they lost to Iowa State to not make the playoff, it's like, well, we beat them or we don't. Either way, we're not going to the playoff. The next game on the docket, number 15 Kansas State, also fighting for a spot in the Big 12 title game. I think they're the front runner to be TCU's opponent, unless they blow it down the stretch here. They're going to Morgantown, where strange things happen. It's not an easy place to play, even when the Mountaineers are a little bit down. They're giving 7.5 to West Virginia on the road, and the total is 54.5. Do you have a feel on either one of those?
Well, the 7.5 makes me feel like they're trying to trick us into taking West Virginia because they're coming off of the win against Oklahoma and Kansas State. Obviously, looked really good. Are they not the most difficult team to bet on or against in the country?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because my gut tells me you take West Virginia in the hook, but I guess I'll do that. But I actually think Kansas State's better with Will Howard. So you know what? No, switch that around. Give me Kansas State. I think this is an opposite trap where they put that hook there trying to get us to take West Virginia. So I'll take the Wildcats.
Ditto. Everything you just said is exactly what I was going to say.
So I took the Mountaineers on the hook when it was 10.5 when they hosted TCU, who was, of course, undefeated. And, you know,
brutal.
And West Virginia's talking about firing their coach
and
everything.
And we took the under.
And I think Rob loves this phraseology. I won the spirit of the bet because the Mountaineers were covering until the last play of the game when they jump off sides. Nice. TCU throws it to the end zone and then they cover the 10.5.
And
brutal.
The over.
Isn't that the worst thing about betting when you read the game perfectly and you still lose?
Yeah. Like
with 20 seconds left, they're throwing a fade to the freaking end zone.
Well, and they could have just taken the penalty and then taken the knee and the game's over. They're like, no, we'll throw it 30 yards to the end zone. And, of course, Quentin Johnson makes an amazing catch. Anyway. I don't have faith that Neil Brown can win 2 games in a row. And especially when the reason they won last weekend was the spark that Garrett Green gave them. And then he's noncommittal to naming Green the starter this week. I'm like, is he really going to trot out JT Daniels? And so – I want to take the Mountaineers on the hook. That's been a pretty decent spot, especially when they're at home. But I'm kind of with y'all. I cannot put my faith in Neil Brown to that extent, especially if he's not going to go with what everybody saw last weekend, that Garrett Green is the better quarterback for what they're trying to do right now. So
yeah.
I'll trail both of y'all and take Kansas State. We'll stay in the Sunflower
State.
Feel
dirty.
I know. It does. I know. We'll stay in the Sunflower State. Kansas is hosting the mighty Texas Longhorns. Now, you would think the way these two programs are designed and the way they exist that Texas would win this game every year, but that's not quite the case. I think they're like 2-3 in the last 5 Kansases against Texas.
Yeah.
With a COVID year sprinkled in there.
Texas spent Kansas's recruiting budget just on the weekend for Arch Manning.
So, and, you know, Kansas isn't – it's not your older brother's Kansas.
Yeah.
They actually look – okay this season. They don't have a good defense. They have a good offense. They are +9 in Lawrence. And I'll save my thoughts for when it's my turn. But Jayhawks +9. The total is 64. What do you think about this one, Chris?
Well, I agree with you. It's one of the most fascinating games every year when you look at what the two programs are, what they should be, and what they actually are. And I don't know. Again, this feels like a trap because the computers and the analytics and whatnot all still love Texas despite everything. Kind of like Iowa State. Iowa State's like a top 35 team according to most power ratings with a 1-6 record in the league. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I can't find myself taking Texas here. It's just, it's similar a little bit to the game with you guys, only in the sense that I want to say something about Tech when we get to that game that I think is the opposite of Texas, where I think that Texas Tech has some moxie, and I think there's toughness to this new regime at Texas Tech. And I'm not bought in that Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian had that grit to them. Now, there's probably some of the guys on that team that want to beat Kansas because of last year, but they got so many new guys who weren't even a part of that. And Kansas is going to be – that place is going to be on fire for the Longhorns to come in there. It's going to be cold. And, man, you're going to give me – I think you can get it at like 9.5, 10 now in some books. I want to take the home team and the points every time on this one, despite what power ratings and whatnot might tell me.
81% of the public money is on Kansas, and I'm a big fake public.
That's terrifying. Guy.
Yeah, I'm going to bet Texas. But it is hanging 9.5 at a bunch of books.
Against my better thinking, I'm actually going to trail 81% of the public and Chris. It's kind of like the reverse of the 7.5 hook on the other. It's like everybody would wait to take it at 10.5 or 10. But if Jalen Daniels comes back, even if he doesn't, the offense has hummed pretty well without him. And I think Texas could be up by 17, 14 in the second half and still kind of trail off a little bit in garbage time. They haven't been a team that finishes very strong. So I like the Jayhawks. I don't feel great about it, especially if 81% of the public is with me. But that is my inclination, so I'll ride with the Jayhawks.
I kind of feel like Sarkisian's going to end up being one of those guys like Holgorsen where he clearly knows football and he knows X's and O's, but I just don't know how good of a leader of young men he is.
Yeah. That's
just kind of where I'm at with him. And like that team looked lifeless last week against TCU in a spot where they should have been anything but. What is Lawrence going to be for them? That's what the power ratings don't judge. And that's where I'm with you. I'm gonna roll with my Jayhawks.
Yeah.
I will take the over.
Oh yeah, I like the over as well. Next up, Bedlam. Maybe the last time the Cowboys go to Norman. We'll see. But Oklahoma State is getting 7.5 on the road. The total is 65.5. We think Spencer Sanders is playing. He said, I'm playing. We don't know for sure if he's starting and if he's 70% or 90%. What are your thoughts on Bedlam, Chris?
To take Oklahoma, I feel like you're getting them at a low. You're buying low with them. With the loss last week. And like Oklahoma State, I just watched them. They suck without Spencer. Like they suck without him.
Yes.
As beat up as they are. And if he's playing in 100%, it was the weirdest thing though. Like I'd never seen anything like it. He doesn't play. Gundy's kids out there just getting owned by the Iowa State defense. And then just randomly you put him in the fourth quarter. It didn't make any sense how they used him last week. So it tells me he must be fairly injured, right? And they're not any good without him. And I will roll with Oklahoma here. And it's much more of a commentary on what I just saw from Oklahoma. Iowa State, like, of all the games I've ever covered, I don't know if I've ever seen them piss a game down their leg worse than last week. I don't think I have. Oklahoma State is not very good without Spencer Sanders, and they're so banged up across the board that I like Oklahoma by 17. I think they roll.
Yeah, same. Now, I think that Texas Tech got up at home to play Texas for the last time because that was the narrative 2 months ago, but I don't think that's the narrative today. I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State will play one more time at least. So I don't think that's in the mind at all. And yeah, I mean, Oklahoma still needs to get bowl eligible. Do they care? Does that roster who's used to playing for Big 12 championships care about getting to the guaranteed rate bowl? I don't know, but I will say that those coaches are putting that in their ear and they're 5-5. So they got to win one of the next two and they might as well win in Bedlam. So I'll take Oklahoma and I think it'll be a big spread as well.
I hate both the spread and the total. I'm not touching either one. That's a little bit of a cop out, but
a little bit.
I wouldn't feel good about either one.
All right, well, give us a lean.
I'm more inclined to say the Pokes actually get up for the rivalry and outperform. Okay, the last one. Do we have a nickname for this game? We can usually come up with something clever, but I didn't think about it in advance.
Well, we
it's like Farmageddon 2.0, cotton versus corn.
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, we can workshop.
Yeah, we'll workshop it.
In the frigid Arctic tundra, Texas Tech goes to Ames. Cyclones favored by 3.5. Total 47.5. I might be already scooping one of your picks. 47.5 is ridiculous.
Yeah,
this game might be 3-0. So I'm taking the under, and I'm leaning Iowa State on the spread. But it might be a 3-point game, so that 3.5 might be crucial. But I feel good about the under. Chris, what do you think about this one?
I'm with you. I would play the under. If I had to take a side, it would probably be Iowa State, just because. Listen, they're not that bad, you know. Like, I'm a big law of averages type of guy when it comes to football. Turnovers usually even out over time, you know, that type of thing. And I do think there's something to, like, the weather aspect. And I've just seen a lot of these Texas teams come up in November and kind of be shell-shocked a little bit. But I mean it what I said. When I watch Texas Tech, I don't think that Texas Tech team that came up here in 2020 just absolutely quit. They completely quit. It was, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. Actually, I have.
We saw it all the time with Texas Tech and Matt Wells.
Well, okay, so Texas did the same thing last year in November.
Yeah.
And they got down and then they just quit here. But I don't think that this Tech team would do that. Like, I think that this team really competes and believes in what they're playing for and who they're playing for. And so that scares me as an Iowa State guy, because, you know, it's going four quarters with this Tech team, I don't want any piece of. But I think because of the weather and everything else we've talked about, it's just, I want the team with the better defense.
Yeah,
right.
I just don't know what Texas Tech is going to do.
Clearly, Iowa State.
Yeah, I don't know how.
So I would.
Sorry.
Yeah, this game, this is a 17-13, you know, 20-13 type of game to me. No matter who wins, I would play the under. But I don't think that this Tech team is just going to quit and be a pushover like we saw 2 years ago. And clearly, two very different teams. I'm not trying to compare. But the last time Tech was here, like, that was my impression of your team, and I'm certainly not getting that out of this group.
If Texas Tech scored 21, who would you say won the game?
21? Well, Iowa State's not average. I don't know. Here's the deal. Your guys' defense isn't exactly the Iron Curtain, though. So I think that Iowa State's going to be able to – but they didn't really move the ball that well against West Virginia until the fourth quarter. So if you guys had 24, I think I would go there. But 21, I think, is right in the middle. I'd probably give it to Texas Tech, honestly, because that's telling the Iowa State offense you have to go three touchdowns plus. They haven't been able to do that very often against Big 12 competition. So, and you got a good defensive guy. Like, you have players. You have, like, I would probably give it to Texas Tech, to be honest with you.
When I think the defense, especially the scoring totals, are a little inflated. You've thrown three pick sixes this year, which kind of inflates some totals. You've also given the ball away in enemy territory excessively, which has hurt the defense quite a bit. So I think the defense is better than some total scores, but I do agree that the Iowa State defense is markedly better and the Texas Tech offense is just moderately better than the Iowa State offense. But I since both of you took Iowa State, I'll take Texas Tech to cover. And you know what? Win. Why not?
Rob the contrarian. Chris.
I don't think that's crazy at all. Like, how can you trust Iowa State at this point to win a Big 12 game? Like, they've shown you week after week that they will invent new ways to lose it. So how are you guys on special teams, real quick?
Bad.
Well, improved since the beginning of the year. The beginning of the year was awful, but okay. Trey Wolf makes field goals, and Austin McNamara punts the ball down the field at the second best clip in the Big 12, but coverage is shaky, and some decisions on when to run out of the end zone, and because you'll start a bunch of drives on the 15, and it's just like, fair catch the ball. What are you doing?
Yeah, and the coaches get asked about it, and they're like, well, we think we're close to breaking one, and we're like, well, okay, we're 10 games in, and you're giving up field position on every kickoff. So, yeah, our field goal kicker is solid. Our punter is All-American caliber. He hasn't had quite the season he had last year. But, yeah, the analytics there, our special teams is not good, and I guess that comes down to coverage and things like that. So I would definitely give the edge to Iowa State there.
Well, I would say gets punts blocked. Like, yeah, here's the thing about that kicker is he's been really good other than that Kansas game where he went like 0-for-3, you know, and he makes one of them and you win the damn game. But that'll be, I think, defense clearly. And then like if somebody screws up bad on special teams, like that could be the game on Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, it's been a lot of fun chopping it up with you. We appreciate you joining us. Before you go, tell our listeners across Big 12 country where they can find your work.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. At Chris M. Williams and at Cyclone Fanatic on Twitter, we love to have fans from all across the Big 12 and CycloneFanatic.com. We've been message board since 2005, and we kind of started as a media publication in 2009. So we've been around, and we're 100% independent, like you guys are. And yeah, it's great to catch up with you. I've been a big fan of your guys' Twitter account. It's been fun to get to know you here. We'll have to do this again. Have me on. We'll do some basketball here at some point. All right?
Absolutely. We look forward to that.
Perfect. Thanks, fellas. Okay. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Chris. Good luck on Saturday.
Yeah, you too, guys. Take care.
See you later.
All right, that was Chris Williams. We'll continue real quick. By the way, I meant to tell him if he was down here, if he's tailgating, he can get some Rojinho barbecue.
When they make the return trip,
yeah,
hopefully he comes. And
you can let him stay with you. He offered his house.
He offered some hospitality to us, yeah. So we got to invite him for Rojinho. And if there's not enough room on my couch or your couch, what else could he do?
Well, you can stay Trick. Which is an upscale option here in Lubbock that's kind of a localized business forward Airbnb, but it is locally owned. And staytrig.com, you can find how you can book a house. Mm-hmm. I was going to say book a room, but you book a house. It's a home at Staytrig.
Yeah, you get the entire facility. It's a short-term rental option,
yeah.
And our listeners, because they love the Gauchos, they get 10% off their first booking at staytrig.com using the promo code Gauchos. They're good for anything. Business travel, if you're in and out of Lubbock for work. Holidays are coming up. Maybe you're coming to see the family. Graduations are coming up. Basketball.
Yeah.
Why roll the dice with an Airbnb? All the Staytrig homes are furnished, professionally decorated up to the same standard. Do that instead of booking a last-minute hotel that's way overpriced. Staytrig.com.
Great Lubbock people on that thing, too.
Yes. Support local.
Solid family. Got any final thoughts? Do you have any other thoughts on the game?
Well, no. I think Chris did a great job with a pretty good overarching preview. We talked bridge. We talked uniforms. We talked actual X's and O's. I was being sincere when I said I don't know what the offense is going to do to move the ball against Iowa State.
Yeah.
They've held – let me find the tweet. They've held every single Big 12 opponent under their season scoring average. They're great against the pass. They're great against the run. Last week I was all about run the damn ball. This week I don't know what you're going to do to move the chains.
Yeah, they're averaging 17 points per game though, so
or yeah, less. So they gave up – this is versus their opponents that they've played, their average scoring versus everybody else in the Big 12 versus when they played Iowa State. They held Kansas 25 points below their average, Kansas State 23 points below, West Virginia 19 points below, Oklahoma State 17 points below, Texas 11 points below. The only two teams that got close, Oklahoma and Baylor, were at 5 and 4 points below their season averages. So, like – that's where, okay, can you get within 10 or 12 of your season average and put up in the 20s? Hopefully. But if you're 23 or 25 below, like a couple of these teams, you don't have a prayer. You know, you're going to lose the game 13-9.
So conference only, Texas Tech averages 32.6 points per game. And they give up 32.7. Iowa State holds teams to 20 points per game, and they score 17.6. That's in the conference-only stats. So what you're just reading off, they're holding teams to 20 and only scoring 17. That's a three-point negative for those keeping track at home. And if you do the score matrix, Kyle.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
The patented score matrix.
Patented.
32 and 20 is bigger than 32 and 17. So I think Texas Tech can win this close game. And the big play hurt Iowa State. But in my research, and obviously I believe him, he watches the Iowa State games much more than me, but it seems like sustained drives are the key to scoring multiple times against Iowa State. So maybe you get one or two big plays, but you have to have some 10, 12, 13, 15 play drives that score against Iowa State.
I wonder, too, how they'll handle the tempo. I know a lot of teams play fast, but that could backfire so bad if you're Texas Tech.
And that is exactly what backfired every year with Cliff.
It's like, okay, let's hurry up and go three and out. Okay, why?
Yes.
And I'm not saying go super slow and get yourself out of a rhythm, because I do think the tempo has helped you stay within a rhythm.
Yes.
But you need a first down or two to get the ball rolling. And if you're not doing that, because this defense is so stout, it could be horrible for you.
But everyone's always like, oh, well, why is the Cloud 3 so hard for Cliff and so hard for Texas Tech to figure out? Well, because you always win tempo and you make quick decisions, and that's a defense designed to keep you underneath and you're trying to take shots.
He did say they're – so here's where I think you're at a pretty big disadvantage. He said they have at least one, maybe two NFL corners. And would you agree that your outside receivers among the receiving core and the skill position players are not your strength as is?
They have not been a strength how they've been used. Well, but they are a definite strength if you're just going 50-50 balls, which is, I think, Tyler Shuck's best.
But you like Miles Price and Xavier White and Roderick Thompson more than Loic Fungi.
Yes.
So I say not don't even attack there, but kind of like Sun Tzu, strike where your opponent is weak. That's not where they're weak. And he said, you know, if there's a weakness, it's probably more like middle of the field linebacker.
Yeah.
The tight ends. Slants. Tight ends need to step up big.
Yeah.
You need to run the ball and probably – more routes kind of to the slot receivers would work better than trying to go outside.
If you could Kolar Iowa State with Tharp this year.
Would love that.
And just run seven slants on third down. I would be so happy. But I do want at least four deep shots to Trey Cleveland and J.J. Sparkman.
Yeah.
Because I think those two are really good at 50-50 balls. And I think Tyler Shuck excels at throwing 50-50 balls. Now, it's a risk. You don't want to throw 10 of them.
Well, and it has to be a 50-50 ball.
Yes.
If the safety is way over the top in coverage and it's a 33-67 ball, don't throw it.
No. And I think it's also important to use play action and to run the damn ball and utilize some deep shots in that respect.
I do think even if the run isn't working great, and it's not going to because Iowa State's defense is that good, you have to stay committed. Even if you're getting 3.5 yards a pop, you have to do it just so the defense has to respect you. You can't say, well, we're only getting 3 yards a pop. Let's only run the ball 12 times today. That's not going to work.
All right. I have one more thing beyond the Big 12 thing. This comment here from Meat Missile. Is it like a hot dog thing or?
Probably something like that. Yeah.
Second year in a row that Neil Brown has set Green the best quarterback on the roster. Now, we thought that when we were playing last year in Morgantown, where Green is coming in and getting first downs, and they put Jarrett Dagey back out there. Shane Lyons has been fired, the athletic director. Odd move.
Before we go here, can I go back even further and say that as much as West Virginia fans don't like Jarrett Dagey, when Neil Brown was starting Austin Kendall, he was still leaving the better option, yes, Jarrett Daigie, on the bench.
3 years.
And then he goes to Jarrett Daigie, yeah, and Garrett Green is better. And now they have JT Daniels. Garrett Green is still better. He has always gone with the wrong quarterback.
Always.
Go ahead.
So where I'm getting at is odd decision to fire Shane Lyons. But I think they fired Shane Lyons because he has them in such a hole with Neil Brown. They can't fire Neil Brown, but they want to get some guy in to fire and hire the next guy. But they're going to have an anonymous donation to fire Neil Brown because Shane Lyons extended him.
Their fans say that the buyout money is there.
Where?
I don't. They say they have it. They said there's like one family. I think the family that has the naming rights to the stadium, the push cars, okay, that they could do it. I'm not disputing it or saying that it's
so
valid.
But. So are they going to hire an athletic director, or are they going to fire a head coach and hire the pair together? Because you're putting your athletic director in an awful position if you hire him after the football coach.
No, yeah, you need the AD to hire the football coach.
Are they too late? Or are they going to fire a guy after bowl season?
They might have. They with this move, they might have been basically saying Neil Brown gets one more year. The new athletic director will evaluate his performance and then bring in his own guy.
Agreed.
If he wants to.
Agreed. And West Virginia fans are not going to like that, in my opinion. All right, I don't have anything else. NASCAR offense, baby. I agree. Do you have any final thoughts?
Bundle up.
We'll do it on Sunday.
We'll do it live.
I was going to say something about Maui, but we'll do it Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's all I got. I'm curious to see how this game goes. I mean, you just haven't played in many spots like this. Defense this elite in 18-degree weather. But I meant what I said to Chris. A source connected to the program said that they practiced in 27 degrees this week.
Was it a believable source?
Yes. Somebody who would know. 27 is probably a different animal than like 16 and windy, but it's something. I think people have this idea in their mind, like, oh, they're coming from Texas.
Yeah.
It's probably 80 down there in November. That's not the case in Lubbock.
It's also early morning, so it's wet, and they're practicing out on the grass fields.
Yeah, it's a wet cold. It looks like it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is funny to me, though, that you spend all this money on the indoor practice facility, but then you need to go practice in the elements.
If they practice indoors even one time this week,
no,
I will be furious. Yeah. I don't think they have.
No, I don't think so either. I remember, too, going back to fall camp. What's up?
Yeah. The song you were going to play at the end of the
– I don't have it.
Do you have that cute – okay.
That band is from Georgia.
I got you.
When it rained, which was a rare occasion this summer, they intentionally practiced in the rain.
Yes.
So that they could get used to
kind of a Bill Belichick thing.
A slippery football. So I have no doubt that they probably tried to time practice this week with some of the colder, windier times to try their best to prepare. So we'll see. And hopefully they bring the heaters.
If they don't, I mean, surely they learned their lesson, right?
Surely.
Surely. That was such a Cliff thing.
Of all the times to try and rebrand as like a tough guy program.
Yeah. Wait, was that the thing? Like they were just trying to prove they were tough? Because that makes zero sense.
I think they like didn't want it to be a distraction. But
the haters?
I don't know, man. Let me, okay, I'm off. This is great podcasting.
Well,
by the
it's,
way.
You know, it is what it is.
Thank you to our sponsors, Cardinal Sports Center, Rahino Barbecue, Stay Trig, and Diversified Lenders. All right, do we got it now?
Yeah, I will say, though.
I was just stalling for us. Is this it?
Yeah. Oh. Love y'all. 1,000. Better get the breakdown slot out. Get me rolling on. I can't keep my thoughts outside. Better get the breakdown spot out. Get me rolling on. Cause I need to feel the stars lit by night. I'm stranded all night. Stranded all right. Southwest 4, 2 miles. 1,019.4. Nordhinder, southeast 2, 11 miles.